Thanks so much, Greg. I'm backstage with our maestro, Stefan Denev. Congratulations, Stefan, after an exciting first half.
Thank you very much. I just love Tchaikovsky. He has so many beautiful melodies, even actually a French one in the second movement of the piano concerto.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that. What is Tchaikovsky's sort of his debt to Russian song in particular, and the way he just weaves melody so beautifully into his compositions?
Alors, what is fascinating is that tonight, after this piano concerto, we'll play in the second part of our concert the 1812 overture, which also features quite a number of songs. It happens that now we don't know them, or maybe the Russian people still remember them, but not us. So we credit Tchaikovsky for a lot of melodies which are not from him. He's, of course, a genius and did create many of his own. But those two pieces in particular do have many other songs that he quoted, and he did it so wonderfully because it does sound indeed very natural.
How did he hear these songs?
Well, I think indeed that he was very near the folklore, and that people at the time were just singing. We have, of course, to remember, I'm saying the obvious, but that there was no radio, no LPs. So it was really a time where people, to hear music, had to go to church or to go to parties or, of course, their mother singing. And I think that it reminds us that indeed it was a time where singing was, I think, more common maybe even than today. And now today we have music everywhere, in lift, in restaurant, in everywhere you hear kind of background music. But I love the idea that at the time of Tchaikovsky, if you had music, it's because somebody was producing it live.
I had read that Tchaikovsky spent a lot of his downtime at his sister's estate in the Ukraine, and he heard the peasants singing. It was these anonymous peasant singers that sort of changed his view of music, maybe.
Very interesting, and indeed, there are some Ukraine songs, so indeed, it's very clear that he heard many of that in that estate. And well, once again, for me, Tchaikovsky is mainly a great melodist. I mean, you really have all those earworms melody, I have to say, that stay forever, because they're also often repeated. And in a world today which is mainly rhythmical, I think we sometimes concentrate too much on the rhythm. I think it's great when you have those melodies that repeats forever in Tchaikovsky to actually concentrate on the notes themselves, on the melodic aspect of them more than the rhythm.
And you mentioned that we're going to end the program today with a solemn overture, the 1812, and it has so many beautiful melodies. We usually hear that outdoors at a festival with fireworks and all those kinds of great sound effects. But does the orchestra have to play the melodies differently because they're in a concert setting?
Well, not really, but what I think is that I wanted to give this piece a chance to be rehearsed and to have a real musical project, because indeed, it does come often for commemoration. It was even written for commemoration. And somehow I feel people maybe sometimes don't take it seriously enough. And I love this piece. I think it's really a masterwork. And despite Tchaikovsky criticizing his own piece when he composed it, it was maybe some coquetry, I don't know, because then he performed it quite a lot. It was one of the pieces he performed the most himself as a conductor. So I think he loved it as well. And I'm so happy that being programmed in a subscription series, we could actually really make it refine, you know, and just really work on details. And so indeed, we could do the right dynamics, for instance. There are a lot of soft dynamics that you never hear so soft when it is played for the 4th of July open air somewhere. And we do not have pyrotechnic effects visually. We do have still a kind of real canon, and I'm very pleased because I hid the sound of a real canon outside of the hall. So actually, it really comes like if you heard a real bomb from outside of the hall, and it's very loud and very exciting.
And before the 1812 overture, we'll be hearing Stokowski's arrangement of Mussorgsky's great operatic masterpiece. Now, last season, you played Stokowski's arrangement of Pictures at an Exhibition. What is it about Stokowski and Mussorgsky for you that goes so well together?
Well, to start with, I do love Mussorgsky. I think he's a fabulous composer. He's a world in itself, actually. It's a bit like Berlioz in France. I think it's very unique. He has his own crazy style and harmonies and orchestration. It's really a special composer for me. But I'm also in love with the history of this orchestra, the Philadelphia Orchestra, and its unique Philadelphia sound, which was molded, which was created by Stokowski, I think, in the 20s, 30s. And these arrangements are wonderful because they respect for the original orchestration of Mussorgsky. You know, they don't use the Rimsky-Korsakov version, but actually the original crazy and rough and violent and wild orchestration. On top of that, there are some wonderful effects that Stokowski found to replace the chorus or to replace voices. And all that together is a very special sound world that is unique with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
And after we discussed Mussorgsky and Stokowski last year, I read a lot about Mussorgsky and how, despite all the ups and downs he had in his life, throughout his career, what he really loved to write were song cycles and art song. And you can hear this in Boris Godunov. How does the Stokowski arrangement bring that intense emotion to life in the orchestra?
Well, it's a very good question because indeed, during the process of the rehearsals, I kind of revisited the history because during the time Stokowski was at the head of the orchestra, he actually invented some system like, for instance, what they call free bowings, which means that the bowings of the strings would not be synchronized, but would be free in order to have no articulation and have a permanent sostenuto legato, as we say. And I actually more and more asked that when I was searching for the right sound, and I indeed felt the need, like Stokowski certainly did, to invent again this free bowing style. And it's fabulous because in that way, you really create an incredible lyrical chorus style sostenuto, and every note is sustained because nobody played together, change together the bow. And this is one of the systems that Stokowski invented, which is fabulous and gives this incredible lyricism.
Does the orchestra enjoy doing that?
I think so. You know, it's part of their history. And I discussed with some string players that said that they really felt it's part of their DNA. And that's also what they were taught being young, is to have also a bow which is so sustained, you know, and the whole length of the bow, and that you would try to hide the change of the bow, you know, going up and down. You try to really create this sostenuto, and this is actually what is so special here, especially in the lower string. You have this incredible sound coming, which is unique. This orchestra has really the most incredible low string section and string section period, I mean, with this fabulous, fabulous sostenuto.
Do you try to bring that to the other orchestras that you meet and conduct around the world?
It's funny because I do sometimes say, you know, I have to be careful, of course, to every orchestra, of course, has its own pride. But I sometimes say, like, can we do, you know, this kind of Philadelphia sound, and people know what it's about because it's really a famous sound, a lush, sostenuto, you know, sound that comes from the string. So, yes, I sometimes try to find the same kind of color because it's one of the famous color in the palette of orchestral world.
Well, we can't wait to hear it. Thank you so much, Stéphane Deneuve, for spending time with us.
Merci beaucoup. Enjoy the second part of the concert.
We will. Thank you.